Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. 2022 has been a year of worker action. Throughout the spring, workers from McDonald's, Wendy's, Dollar General, and other big national chains walked off the job in more than a dozen states, demanding higher wages and better conditions. And those actions by low-wage workers proved effective in California, where lawmakers moved to establish a $15 per hour minimum wage. That's going to take effect starting January 1. And of course, you remember Amazon warehouse workers in key locations fighting to establish unions? All those Starbucks workers who established unions across the country, including 100 stores that walked out this past week. And we've been bringing you the story of one of the largest strikes in American higher education. It just moved into its fifth week in the University of California system, even as deep disagreements about terms of settlement threaten hard-won solidarity. Yeah, labor organizing sits squarely at the center of 2022. And at the center of our Tuesday pick for the Takeaway Holiday Book Club. Fight Like Hell, The Untold History of American Labor, offers context and grounding for the economic battles of workers that we witnessed this year. I sat down with the book's author, Kim Kelly, labor columnist for Teen Vogue.
We're kind of living through a historic moment. And the workers who have been knocked down and dragged and beaten up and mistreated and exploited for a very long time, a lot of those folks are kind of looking around and thinking, you know, something's got to give. Maybe it's time for me to do something about all this. And for a lot of those folks, that something is joining or organizing a union.
So let's look back a bit and tell me a bit about other moments when workers were like, actually, enough of this. And I'm wondering if there are resonances in those moments and what's happening now.
So the most exciting thing that we've been seeing, especially in very recent efforts like we've seen at Amazon and Starbucks, is the fact that worker-led, worker-directed organizing is having a moment. And that specifically a lot of the folks leading those efforts are young Black and brown folks, queer and trans folks, folks who are working in industries that might have been dismissed previously as hard to organize or unorganizable. And the fact that we're seeing so much solidarity being built on the shop floor and in the factory and in the coffee shops, that really matters. And we've had so many moments throughout history where workers have come together and been like, all right, screw this. We're gonna strike. We're gonna unionize. We're gonna do something. There's a moment that I love referencing back in 1946, specifically in Hawaii during the Great Sugar Strike, where we had the situation where the majority of the land in the islands was owned by these white mainland American or European guys, and the land was worked by Native Hawaiians and immigrant workers from all around Asia and other parts of the world. And they were treated poorly. They were treated unequally too. The bosses tried to keep the workforce kind of docile and isolated from one another by physically separating the workers. There's a camp for Chinese workers. There's a camp for Japanese and Filipino. Like it was, and the workers were paid differently. They were treated differently. These manufactured divisions were enacted in basically trying to keep the workers from organizing. And it didn't work. And by the time that the strike came around, the way that the workers won was by building these cross-cultural, multilingual, multiracial coalitions that started in the strike kitchens and in meetings where people brought in translators to make sure everybody could understand what was happening. A community was really built. And that's how they won. They won by realizing, okay, maybe we have different experiences, maybe we come from different places, but we are all in this together. Is really an us against them moment. And they took that and they won. They made history by doing that. And there are so many examples of workers doing that throughout history. And it's so exciting to be living through a moment now where we're kind of seeing history repeat itself in a good way, because that doesn't happen that often in this country.
All right, so let's say a little bit more about that. Like when you say, and then they won. So what does it mean to have a labor win?
Honestly, I think it depends on what you start out asking for, demanding, right? Like in the Fight for 15 situation, we couldn't have, well, maybe economists who are smarter than me could have predicted that this inflation situation would happen. But really, it comes out to setting a goal. Fight 15, they have a goal. They're still working towards that goal. Lord help all of us if they don't reach that goal. But sometimes it's as simple as trying to win union recognition or win a strike, get a better contract, get a raise, get the boss to fire someone who isn't behaving properly at work or is abusing other employees, getting rid of the boss himself. It depends on what the workers in any given situation and community and workspace decide they need. And that's how we win. I mean, we haven't won the class war yet, but there have been so many other victories, maybe smaller victories throughout the centuries, that have gotten us a little bit closer to where we need to be. Whether we're talking about the West Virginia Mine Wars, where coal miners literally went to war against armed guards just to win the right to unionize, or Ida Mae Stoll, also a miner in Ohio back in the 30s, who, she loved being a coal miner, but the law forbid women from engaging in, you know, heavy work, heavy industry jobs. And she fought, she went to court, and she got her job back. That was a win for her. And that kind of opened doors for more women workers who wanted to take that job, to take that job later on. Like everything, every win, whether it's small or big, whether it's a legal victory or a financial victory, or just like a moral victory, like it builds. Like we've built upon the work of so many other people. And, you know, the next generation after us, they're going to build on what we do right now. It's all connected. It's all a chain. And every little step forward, I think that's a win for all of us.
For folks who may not think of themselves as workers, because we tend to hold that identity in a very particularized class way, tell me a lesson from either the history or the contemporary moment of workers organizing that that everyone who earns a paycheck should take away.
If you have a boss, you need a union. I mean, it's kind of as simple as that, right? Whether you're working in the coal mines or you're working at Gawker Media, I think there are some pretty reductive stereotypes around what a quote unquote union worker looks like or who a worker is. That, like, of course, people like grad students and coffee shop workers and people that work in nonprofits, like, for some reason, they don't count. But they work hard. They get a paycheck. They need to be protected. They deserve to be respected and to have dignity on the job. Like, we're all members of the working class. And that is what we need to remember. It doesn't necessarily matter what your job title is. It matters how you're being treated and how you can benefit from coming together with your coworkers and demanding something better.
That was Kim Kelly, labor columnist for Teen Vogue and author of Fight Like Hell, The Untold History of American Labor.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. Is Jean Lafitte?
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Merriam-Webster's English Dictionary defines gaslighting as the word of 2022.
Gaslight. Gatekeep. Girl boss.
Each year, major dictionaries choose words they believe encapsulate some aspect of the zeitgeist and of the potential for lasting cultural significance. And gaslighting is certainly having a moment. It means, quote, the act or practices of grossly misleading someone, especially for one's own advantage. Merriam-Webster says this year they saw a nearly 2,000% increase in searches for the word. And while it typically gets a lot of mileage in reference to interpersonal relationships, it's taken on a new significance in the context of political polarization and disinformation. Here's political commentator Charlie Sykes speaking on MSNBC.
Donald Trump is lying. He's lying about lying. What you see there is a classic case of gaslighting.
Now, Dictionary.com's word of the year is having a similarly politically charged moment. The word? Woman. The site says searches jumped 1,400%, a massive leap for such a common word. It saw spikes during certain high-profile events, including the confirmation hearing for Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Can you provide a definition for the word woman?
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
Senator, in my work as a judge, what I do is I address disputes. If there's a dispute about a definition, people make arguments, and I look at the law and I decide. Well,
but if these two words aren't quite capturing the vibes of 2022 for you, Oxford University Press might get you there. Their word of the year, goblin mode. Okay, yeah, I had to look this one up too. It means, quote, a type of behavior which is unapologetically self-indulgent, lazy, slovenly, or greedy, typically in a way that rejects social norms or expectations. In my head, I see Gollum in Lord of the Rings, hunched over, gleefully chowing down on a still wriggling raw fish without a care in the world. Or, as The Atlantic recently put it, goblin mode is, quote, a complete shedding of the mask of public life, or just staying home and getting weird. I think it's safe to say that in this post-lockdown year, we've all gone goblin mode at some point. Now, if you're sensing a wide chasm of gravitas between this and the other words of the year, that might be because, for the first time ever, Oxford put their word of the year choice to an online poll. That's democracy at work, folks. Goblin mode.
Sneeper.
So in the spirit of listening to the voice of the people, I asked Team Takeaway to tell us their words of the year for 2022. Senior producer Shanta Covington took it in a meta direction.
My word of the year is word. Yep, I'm bringing it back. Because word can stand for yes, it can stand for no, or it can stand for, hey, I agree with you 100%.
I'm Monica Morales-Garcia. I'm an associate producer here at The Takeaway. And this year, I got a new kitten. So my words of the year are definitely get down.
Associate producer Ryan Wild chose a retro throwback.
My word for 2022 is far out. When someone says something ridiculous or something's really impressive, it's far out. I guess that's two words, but who's counting?
I'm Mary, Takeaway Associate Producer. I think my word of the year is growth, because that's what this year felt like for me, and it's a good feeling.
And here's the newest member of our team to close it out.
My name is Morgan Givens. I'm an associate producer here at The Takeaway, and my word of the year is bruh. B-R-U-H, bruh. Bruh encompasses so many things. Bruh, unbelievable. Bruh, I'm excited for you. Bruh. No, you didn't do that. My word of the year is bruh.
Bruh. Let us know your picks for word of the year. Tweet us at The Takeaway or call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. That's 877-869-8253.